You might call this past week here in London an Indian summer, but while we might be soaking up the final rays, the sun is indeed setting on the season. So as autumn beckons, sit back as we take you on a publishing tour from Hamburg to New York City, today on The Stack. On today's show, we'll pop in for a browse at this year's IndieCon independent magazine conference in Hamburg.
People were very excited to have a different experience in literary culture by putting it in an actual event, not just reading by yourself at home.
Plus, we'll hear from US publication Palette about how they merged thinking and drinking into one very handsome read.
Palette, at its core, I guess, takes the spirit of the craft beer drinker, so someone who is, you know, interested in beer but also interested in a lot more things outside of beer.
All that plus some end-of-summer reading tips from Stack Magazine's Stephen Watson. That's today on The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Stack. We'll head to Hamburg soon, but first I'd like to welcome my guest today. A regular voice here at The Stack is Stephen Watson from the other Stack, Stack Magazines. Stephen, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
Good to see you, as always. Now, you've been at IndieCon. You've got a wealth of magazines. There's all sorts of exciting things happening on the other Planet Stack at the moment.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah, I've been over at IndieCon and looking forward to showing you some of the spoils I brought back from that. And returned to the office this week and we now have three staff. We've bloomed to three staff because we're in full swing with the Stack Awards, which is the big awards programme which we started last year. And we're now doing again this year, bigger and better, and very excited about the magazines that are coming in for it.
And I think we always start the shows when you come on. I say, look, you know, let's kind of stick our finger in the air and gauge the mood of the independent magazine section. We've got some great stories, obviously, out of IndieCon. We've got Palette magazine on the show. You know, where are we at? I guess when you return, especially for something like IndieCon, it just gets the juices flowing. You're in awards season. Does it feel as good as ever? What's the report card?
You can't go to IndieCon and not come away with a smile on your face. Mm. Like they do such a good job over there for genuinely... It's an independent production. They make a magazine themselves. They love this world. They are thoroughly part of it. And so to come back from that with the smile on the face and into the office where we've got the magazines racking up on the shelves now in all the different categories. We've added three categories this year, so we're now awarding Editor of the Year, Art Director of the Year and Student Mag of the Year. And to see the stuff that's coming in just for those is really excellent. And actually, even on Saturday night at IndieCon, we had our sort of like big finishing party and then went to the launch of a student magazine, which turned out to be the most amazing student magazine with this like lenticular screen on the cover where you remove the cover and all the words on the letters on the front animate. It's just like there is a crazy amount of creativity that just seems to be coming out of every corner at the moment.
And what about, just briefly, in terms of business models? Obviously the Stack, our regular listeners will know how Stack Magazines operates, but is that a topic of conversation as well? Presumably at IndieCon you do talk to people, I don't know if you're canvassing, you know, other titles to add or whether people are just interested in the business model, about how creative I guess publishers are, as well as, you know, the point of sales and the people who, like you, have these different kinds of models to reflect the challenges that we know that do beset print media.
I mean, I think that these days you see lots of people still want and need to have their magazines in the shops. Mm. That is, it's obviously a very important way for people to discover your magazine. But of course, you know, more and more people are finding other ways to sell, whether that's, it's primarily through the internet. In fact, one of the mags that I've brought along today is from China, and Nelson Ng from Lost was over speaking specifically about the Chinese market and how mobile phones in the last couple of years have completely opened the independent print market, because everybody nowadays is accustomed to the idea that you can scan a QR code with your phone and you've just bought a thing. So if you're a publisher, you set up a shop in 10 minutes and all of the money that you pay goes to you. Apparently there are no transaction charges in China on this stuff. So they're getting this fantastic boost of a whole new way to sell the magazines, and it's opening China up to a whole new type of publishing.
And that's interesting, because I guess that's the diametric opposite of what a lot of the naysayers have been saying about print, which is that it cannot compete, and if people have devices, instead it's incorporating that device into the point of sale process, I guess. And interestingly, you know, I guess that's a good profit model where the money goes to the people actually doing the creative work.
Absolutely. He told this story which was just making, like, I think all European independent publishers incredibly jealous, where he was saying that you literally scan a QR code, a guy comes to your door to pick up a box of magazines, the person who's bought that in another city gets a message that that's just been collected, and the next day those magazines arrive at the shop ready to be sold. Why can't we do that? Why can't we do that? But I mean, I just think I would love to go to China and see some of this for myself, because it sounds like just the most exciting time.
Stack magazines on the road? We could surely get into that, no?
If you can pay for me to go that time, I would be well, like a shot.
We'll talk about that after the programme. We'll talk about some more of your magazines later, but given you just mentioned that one, actually, why don't we talk about it now? Given you've got it here, because this is an intriguing thing that you have.
It's a great place to start, so I'm going to let you unbox
that. Here we go.
I say unbox because it is a packet of cigarettes. It's a genuine actual...
We need studio cam for this.
I know. It's a genuine actual box of cigarettes. You open the flap and you've got like what looks like cigarettes in there. You pull it out and it's actually a beautiful little gold-edged... It's not really a magazine. It's more... I don't know what it is. Like a little kind of tiny art piece.
If you could imagine a pack of playing cards hinged at one side,
right,
gilt-edged.
Right.
That sort of paints the picture, I guess.
Exactly. And it's made by a guy called Thomas Sovin, who is based in Beijing, I believe. And the thing is called Until Death Do Us Part. And inside, it's a series of found images from Chinese wedding ceremonies, where apparently it was traditional that the bride would go around and light everybody's cigarettes, and then you'd play like kind of cigarette games in the wedding ceremony. So he's gone and found all these images, like, I think, basically in the dump, and pulled them together as this beautiful
amazing
thing, which
pictures.
Is like, you know,
absolutely
it's sort of
pictures.
It's life and death together, and nostalgic, but also just completely weird. It's there's one spread with a smoking baby, and I think you don't have to say much more than that.
It does say, you're quite right, there's a little note at the end, and it says they're from the Beijing Silver Mine Project, an archive of 500,000 negatives salvaged over the years from a recycling plant just outside Beijing. So that is what an extraordinary thing. And this is signed with a flourish. That's pretty creative. This is this interesting point, isn't it? This is not a mass market piece, is it? It's a real kind of amazing collectible. I guess you're kind of going to win some column inches, aren't you, positively, when you give somebody something as perfect as that. What an excellent way to start. Just briefly, I mean, we're going to be heading over to Hamburg in a minute. What were some of the other highlights, just briefly? I mean, obviously some great products, some creative people, amazing, I guess you get to have little bilateral chats with other people across all the businesses. Often ask people when they come back, I mean, what's the key takeaway? We know lots of positive messages. What do you think will kind of live long in the mind from this year's edition?
I think the best thing about Indicon is it's small. They have around 100 audience members, and it's all held in this lovely villa down by the lake. And it means that over 2 days, you genuinely get to feel like you've spoken to everybody who's there. And I think that, you know, kind of in terms of the messages that people were bringing forth, the theme of the weekend was pioneer communities. So there was a lot of talk about community, but actually just... It's one of those examples of show, don't tell. You know, you didn't need to stand at the front and talk about community because you were in the thick of this really fantastic, very special feeling community.
Well, we'll be delving into that community when we go over to IndieCon right after this. Have you ever walked into a newsagent's to shelves stuffed full of various magazine titles, only to find that none is capturing your eye? Standing out from the pack is a tricky thing, but in a competitive market, it's also crucial, especially if you're an independent publisher. IndieCon, as we've been hearing, is a festival dedicated to independent magazines held annually in Hamburg. Susanna Kvetkova is one of the people behind Indie Title Backstage Talks. She was at this year's event and spoke to some magazine makers, including one of the people behind a title we discussed a little earlier, Lost.
My name is Nelson. I'm originally from Singapore, but I'm based in Shanghai, China now. And I work on a magazine called Lost, which is a travel magazine about personal travel stories. The internet is actually affecting life in China a lot. Not so much the internet, but the mobile phone. Mm-hmm. The mobile phone is kind of like taken over like daily lives, especially for like young kids. So that's kind of helping and pushing indie publishing as well, actually. People buy stuff on their phone more than, I think, than they buy at a physical shop.
So do you think it's then more difficult for the indie magazine because of that?
No, it's actually easier because people can sell indie magazines online and on phones directly to their customers. And what's going on in China is that everyone is having like, everyone is going on WeChat. I don't know if you know what WeChat is. Yeah. It's kind of WhatsApp but on steroids because imagine you can use WhatsApp but you can also pay people with chat. You can do delivery, you can make orders, you can do all sorts of things. And WeChat also has like a public feed account. So it's like a channel. With the channel, you can get fans. If you publish an article, like maybe overnight, like 10,000 people can read it. So if you have a lot of fans, you can really sell anything.
My name is Mats Panko. I'm the publisher of the magazine Die Epilogue, which started in 2013, and now we published the fifth issue. It's a magazine about contemporary culture. We started a small epilogue venue. We had at certain different occasions in different cities, and epilogue musical we did, which was pretty much some guy with a guitar and a dub machine and another one reading the magazine, which sounds kind of boring, but people were very excited to have a different experience in literary culture by putting it in an actual event, not just reading by yourself at home.
To make it more social, maybe.
Yeah, like, to make it more social. That's probably the right thing. And you have the chance to interact with the audience, or the other way around.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because reading a magazine is such a solitary thing to do. But at the same time, independent magazines are all about the communities. So it's like an interesting contrast in a way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's blurring. There's a contributing community, obviously, to small magazines which are not able to pay a reasonable fee for their contributors. So it's pretty much all a very big friends and family game. And it's blurring with the audience, the readership, because at some point you have readers contributing to the magazine, or other people which started in the magazine, which are later on in the process, after a few years, just readers. And so I think like it's an interesting chance in cultural production to not have a fixed team which is only working on one project, but having the chance to open it up to an audience, even though it's not a hypertext or interactive medium like probably the internet is. Mm-hmm.
A couple of the voices from IndieCon this year, talking to Zuzana Kvetkova for The Stack. You're with The Stack on Monocle 24. Stephen Watson is still with me. Steve, we were rifling through the treasure chest of items at Stack HQ. Just might manage to get that out. And you've brought some more picks. Where should we head next?
It only seems fair to begin with Gentle Rain. So this is the magazine that is made by Die Brüder, the agency which is based in Hamburg and Berlin, who are the guys who produce IndieCon. So this started, I think, maybe 3 years ago with Malta and Urs, the two of the founders, putting together a piece of work on independent publishing. And they got so interested from this piece of university work that that led them to actually hold the first IndieCon, to bring some of these magazines together in Hamburg.
We're actually been chatting, I think, with the Gentle Rain team imminently on the site, maybe in the next kind of week or two. But just tell us a little bit about the magazine they produce, because it's, again, I don't know, slightly unusual format. I rather like it. It's kind of like a photo album shape, but it's a pretty good, what would you say, it kind of boils down a lot of the narratives and things that people like, both at IndieCon and in the indie magazine section generally.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's important to say that this is not an independent magazine. So this is a magazine that's commissioned by the city of Hamburg to show Hamburg off to the wider world. But they have taken a lot of independent magazine cues from it. So you'll see in their kind of their center pages, they have a sponsors section where you have the plain blue page, the logo of the sponsor, and a bit of text. And that's something that was first done, I believe, by Kai on Offscreen magazine, and you've since seen it in InTown and all sorts of other places. Or you look at the way that they actually look at their city and the cover story. You would look at the cover and probably assume that the cover story is about maybe a giant lizard in the city or something, because that's what's there. But actually, the cover story is the Elbe Philharmonie, which is the amazing new building they've just got opening there. And the top of the roof of this building, which is a very distinctive roof, is just peeping above some steps on the cover. So it's this way of looking at something almost through your peripheral vision, looking slightly askance at it to give a sense of the feeling of a place rather than restaurants and bars and things like that. And that feels to me like a particularly indie approach.
And I think what's good about this is it also shows that the, you know, some things we always talk about, the enduring value of paper, you know, there are enlightened, whether you call them advertisers, commercial partners, even if it's kind of city, state or governmental sponsors, who also understand that there's a great value in making that investment. And then actually, rather than a sort of a shouty campaign with lots of gloss and glitz and glamour, you know, there's an educated readership out there now. And it's not just for the Cognoscenti, actually. I mean, I don't know what the sort of print runs are, but you can make your point, I don't know, more elegantly perhaps than you can with a traditional campaign.
Yeah, exactly. And well, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of this, but I would guess that this has come about as a result of the relationship between the city of Hamburg and Die Brüder and Indicon. And the fact that they've now worked together for a few years. And so they've probably said, well, all right, you live in this city. You've brought a lot of interesting people to this city. How would you portray it? You're the experts. And they've kind of been given free rein to go off and make this really fun. I mean, the main thing about the magazine is it's fun. It's really fun magazine.
Exactly. I like Godzilla there. Just checking out a few local attractions. Can't argue with that. where should we go next?
So next, this mag wasn't launched at Indicon, but this is Sofa. This is made by Ricardo Messner, who is the publisher of Flaneur magazine, along with Kaya Hegel, who also contributed to Flaneur. And I'm really interested in this magazine for its subversive qualities and what that says about the wider magazine market, because Ricardo's been plugging away for a few years now making Flaneur, and it's a very, very beautiful magazine, really wonderful example of what you can do with indies. But it's big and heavy and very expensive to make, and she just got to thinking, why don't we make magazines out of cheaper paper that are much thinner and much lighter, and maybe we could make a profit? We could make an actual business out of...
Whoa.
Yeah, seriously.
What are you saying?
But what does it say about this independent magazine market that actually is certainly a revelation for a publisher who's been working for a few years at it, but also has this sort of subversive feel to it? And I think that, you know, we see... So far, this first issue is the teens issue. So they've got lots of teens talking about their lives and what the future holds for them. Sofa is always going to be focused on the future. So I think the next issue is on cyber love. So they're going to be coming up with interesting perspectives on that. But for me, it's the form of the magazine that's the most interesting thing.
Well, I was going to say, I'd like to set you a challenge. So describe, if you dare, the sort of the aesthetic quality.
Oh,
of this.
Man, the aesthetic. It's like the...
I almost can't describe it, but I want to.
So lots of bright blue, lots of bright pink, lots of bright yellow. Stories, the headline, well, what looks like a headline is actually the first couple of words of the story. What looks like the subhead is the words that happen to come after that. And then the body copy begins a few words into a sentence. All this stuff is, I think, in keeping with this idea of a subversive approach to publishing and saying, we don't have to do it this way. We don't have to make a big, heavy, beautiful magazine that costs £20. We can do it this way too. And they want to shake things up. They want to have fun with it.
Which they're certainly doing. Lurid doesn't begin to describe it. And I guess there's also this question where, you know, there's lots of sort of social media echoes. They're kind of picking up design cues, if you will, from, you know, small screens, how you'd engage with the media. But it's kind of eyeball achingly, confrontationally lurid. But I think that's really interesting for it. Is it going to, presumably it will look fairly different each time? I mean, in terms of the aesthetics rather than, say, the paper and the stuff.
Yeah, it's designed by Studio Yukiko. And so, again, that's the same people who design Flaneur. Mm. I reckon that they'll be having a bit of fun with playing around with what they're going to make it do next.
Right, where should we go next?
There's just
nice to welcome an old friend into the studio.
In a
Steve,
way,
that's
there's
fine.
Sort of no point talking about The Gentlewoman because you just know it's going to be bloody brilliant.
We deal with just consistent excellence on this programme. That's perfectly acceptable.
This issue was launched at Indicon, and I'm very pleased to say that the copy you're holding in your hands is the first copy of that issue that was sold in the world, because I dashed to the back of the room.
That is a dual stack exclusive.
As the boxes were being opened, and that was the first one. Veronica Ditting, the art director, was there, and Richard O'Mahony, the senior editor, was there. They did a great talk about actually making The Gentlewoman. But I did say to Veronica that night, look, could you just do a bad one? Just do one bad one.
Just make other people feel better.
Well, make it more interesting again. Like, the you know, if they made an issue of The Gentlewoman that sort of looked more like Sofa, then it would be like
the Spirit of 68 again. People couldn't live with it. But I mean, as you said, it's a frequent returning point for us, for our guests, and it's become sort of shorthand for how to make a great magazine, at the risk of sort of cursing them for all eternity to maintain those standards. But what is the secret? Is it just because there's a reassuring feel to it? It obviously always looks incredibly elegant and beautiful, but is that just about a group of people who know exactly what they're doing? They won't compromise, they take their time. I mean, what is the secret? Or is the secret that there is no secret?
So I think that I'm sure time has something to do with it. The fact it's out twice a year means that you have time to work that up. Although, as they were saying in their talk, inevitably they end up with something that for 5 months has looked like it's going to be no problem, that's happening, and then it drops out, and so then something else has to happen. But then,
and I suppose that's reassuring for whether you're on a monthly mag cycle, quarterly, whatever. You always have those points in the momentum that happen that way.
Exactly.
But it's got to make it a bit easy. But then I suppose you could argue you have less time to run again and put things right, so you have to be more exacting. Maybe it's less forgiving in a way because it's only.
I think that they know that because they've got two a year, everyone has to be brilliant. That would be an awfully long time to be left with that looking at you if you were not happy with what you just produced. And I think they've got to the point where the team is there, they know exactly what they're doing, and just every time it comes out and you know you want it.
Wonderful stuff. Well, that's a good optimistic point on which to end. As always, I do try my best. Steve, great to have you with us. What should we look out for next? The awards, when exactly is that all happening?
Yeah, okay, so the deadline for submissions is the 7th of October, but you have to have sent us your magazines by then as well, so don't leave it till the 6th of October. And then our judging day is 17th of November, and then the big award ceremony is the 29th of November.
We'll speak to you again before then, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Steve Watson from Stack Magazines, thanks as always for being with us on the programme. You're back with The Stack on Monocle 24. Now, if you like thinking and aren't opposed to a little bit of drinking here and there too, just a tipple or two, well, listen up. Palette Magazine is a rather Swiss publication that proudly caters to those who are only interested in, well, just about everything. Co-founder Nadia Sicardo joins me now from our New York bureau. Hello, Nadia. It's brilliant to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. Now tell to the uninitiated, we're at what, issue 4, I think, of Palette now. Tell us about the magazine. I said it's only if you're interested in everything. it's sort of a flippant comment, but I guess that's kind of at the heart of it. It's a real almanac of well, all sorts of things.
It really is. So Palette, at its core, I guess, takes the spirit of the craft beer drinker. So someone who is, you know, interested in beer, but also interested in a lot more things outside of beer, and kind of channels their spirit. So in the magazine, in between the covers, you'll find stories that range from motorbike building to Ikebana to the story of how Johnny Cash met Merle Haggard. Basically all things that we, myself and Rick Bannister, are interested in, but also connect back with beer in a very subtle way.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this because I was just thinking, wow, that is the editorial meeting I would love to be in, because it kind of just goes it goes anywhere. What's that process? Is it literally anything that sort of tickles yours and Rick's fancy? And how explicit does that link back to beer have to be? Can it really just be a little tangent, or does there need to be something there that speaks to that relationship?
There is usually a little link, but often it's not intended or even on purpose. We do have stories that are more beer focused. For instance, in the latest issue, in issue 4, we ask David Astle, who's a great linguist, to kind of look at the language around beer, so where the term a rule of thumb comes from. It started because a brewer put their thumb in a keg of beer, the story goes. But really, the editorial process comes conversationally between Rick and I. Rick is a great thinker, and he often will pull out themes or tales from his day-to-day and things that he's come across, and we'll discuss them and kind of work them up into stories. And to be honest, like, often we find that there is a subtle beer link there in the editorial.
Tell us a little bit too then about the design aesthetic, because there's some incredible, I mean, I guess variation. You've got some amazing artwork. There's some real kind of bold typographic statements as well in the piece. How do you go about balancing, you know, illustration to photography to kind of archive stuff? How does that process work?
We're very fortunate to work with a designer, Marta Rocker. She is an incredible mind and also, you know, has a real sense for quirk. We wanted Palette to be a beautiful mag, to be clean and easy to read and easy to navigate, but we wanted it to have a bit of personality, kind of like a zine, a bit of kind of rock and roll built in there. And Marta was really, really clever at translating that into a clean typographic treatment. So there's the bold headings and the beautiful text that flows kind of with nods to more traditional typography, typographic treatment. But then there's kind of crazy features within the mag, like the pop cultural beer feature we do in the latest issue. It's Shakespeare's. So we asked four brewers to choose a Shakespeare tale and brew a hypothetical beer based off a play. And Marta's kind of treated that more as a illustrative zine within the magazine, I guess.
Just finally, Nadia, let me ask you, what else do we have to look forward to? I always try and get people to reveal a little editorial secret to us or whet our appetites with what might be coming next. Anything you can point us to that we should be getting excited about as committed Palette fans?
I love that. Well, we are very excited to have issue 4 out and done. So we've made 4 issues. We are a quarterly in form, not just telling everyone that we are. And we're excited to be on shelves in London now too, and around the UK. That's been a very recent thing. So you can look out for Palette there too. It's kind of a great time to be, you know, done that first year and looking to what's next.
Wonderful. Well, we'll drink to that, if you'll forgive the terrible pun. And have a few well-earned ones as well. Nadia Sicardo, thanks for popping into our New York Bureau to join us here on The Stack.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is all we have time for on this week's edition of The Stack. Thanks to our various guests and contributors today, to Zuzana Kvetkova, Stephen Watson and Nadia Sicardo in New York. The Stack was produced by Ben Rylan and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and our editor back in the chair today, Claire Urban. Comments or queries are welcome, info@monocle.com, and don't forget to join us at the same time next week. I'm Tom Edwards. Goodbye.